Setting up shop.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Setting Up Shop. I'm your host, Dan, a woodworker from the UK, and with me, as always, are Heidi, a potter from America, and Rasmus, a blacksmith from Norway.
Hello.
They are actually here. I'm not stitching them in. It's fine. So our subject this week is on social media, and we're not going to at all, as with everything here, we're not going to profess to be experts on this subject. We're not going to give you all of the insights into the latest algorithms and how to maximize and optimize and SEO and all of those buzzwords and etc. But what we are going to talk to you about, a few things that we've come across and a few different ways that certainly I'm trying to work towards my social media being, and I know that Heidi has been doing for a little while and quite successfully. Rasmus, we don't necessarily address too much when it comes to social media. It's, you know, it's frankly just rude that anyone who gets to just smash things with a hammer and generate sparks gets more followers. But, you know, there's a reason why blacksmiths like to put things on camera. It's very attractive. I don't mean the blacksmiths. I'm talking about the fire and the things being hit with hammers.
Oh, never mind.
You know, Joe's the exception to the rule, as we all know.
Yes, handsome Joe.
Indeed. Brief moment of silence to reflect on handsome Joe. There we go. Right. Okay. For those of you listening who have no idea who I'm talking about, well, I pity you. We're not going to share. This podcast has taken a slight turn this week. Talking then about social media, and really the first thing that we want to talk about is, it's very easy when you are setting up a new business or trying to tell all your friends about something that you're doing, whether you've got a physical project or a product or a digital product, is to assume that you need to like create everything. You need a Facebook page, an Instagram page, a Threads feed, and a TikTok, and all of the other things that might be more localized to your own country. And the truth is that not all of those are important. And if we, as we keep doing, go back to that element of how much time do you have, you're going to have to be aware of that when you start thinking about generative content for all of the social medias. But the root cause of it right at the beginning is what is your intention? You know, what are you using the social media for? Are you using the social media to share lots of pictures of things you've just made because you're excited? That's great, but probably more appropriate for friends and family until your customers understand you or brand you or however it is that you've created your business. So that's just kind of a almost an entry-level comment into this consideration of what is your intention. I'm going to pass over to Heidi to sort of flesh out that thought a little bit. And then we'll hear Rasmus's thoughts on the subject as well. And we'll just kind of interject around. So this will be slightly less formulaic than possibly some of the other episodes, but and more of a free-flowing conversation, because social media as a blanket term is pretty vast. Heidi?
Sure. Well, I think the biggest notable thing about social media is that there is nothing that is permanent other than the history, right? So everything that you post online lives forever. But the way that you present yourself can change and ebb and flow to chase whatever you're desiring. So if you do open an Instagram account with your business name and you've done the thing of just posting video after video of you talking into the camera that really doesn't tell anybody what you're trying to promote, doesn't really explain what your business is, you can't necessarily completely eliminate it, but you can clear it from your feed to like put something new up to rebrand yourself, so to speak. So never feel like when you start your online journey with your business that you're stuck with whatever template you've decided to follow, whether you're doing Instagram or you're doing YouTube or you have your own website. Those things are all modifiable, and you can rest assured that every other business that's out there, including the huge corporations that exist, are constantly eyeing what the next marketing opportunity is going to be within the realm of social media. So never feel like what you're doing is absolutely wrong, because you might be right on the hot button opportunity for some new wave that's coming through. So feel good about, you know, expressing yourself and being authentic about who you are and what your brand is. But I would say that there are some little things that you can do to set yourself up for success from the very beginning. I think Dan was kind of hitting on that a little bit with, you know, having intentionality. So if you have followed us the previous season, which I'm sure you did, we kind of talked about how to establish your brand and establish what you're selling. So in the same, I'm not sure if you can hear the dogs in the background, but they're very excited about the mailman.
It adds you know, the air of relatability to our podcast.
There you go. So essentially, it's the same approach that you would be taking with building your business when you start looking at yourself marketing your business online. It's just parasocial versus in person. So however you present yourself at a market, you would want to have it relatable or adjacent to how you're presenting yourself on social media, in my opinion.
Yeah, that all makes sense. And I think to a certain extent as well, that includes the way you dress, depending on the social media and how much of your workspace you might show. You know, because if you're trying to present a professional front and you've not yet got your workspace nailed, you know, you're like, you're working in the corner of your bedroom or something, and then you're trying to do a social media post or a story or something, and you've got underwear drying on a rack in the background, it's not really kind of the professional level of things that you might want to be looking in. That doesn't mean, oh, you've now got to buy a fake background and create a whole studio kind of whatever. There are cheap ways of getting around that. But it's about being mindful, isn't it? It's about understanding what it is that you are trying to represent and you are trying to present forwards, and what you want the end result of your posts to be. Like, there should always be an intent behind them, whether it's sharing information, emoting a response, you know, are you putting out a call to action, all of these kind of things. If in some ways, and this is purely just giving myself a get out clause, in some ways, if you haven't got something to talk about at the moment or something to say that's going to add to the brand, sometimes it's better to just not say anything. Or, you know, you can always repost something that did well in the past, like not too frequently, you know, maybe 6 months or something like that. Don't make a post for the sake of making content, I would argue. But then I could be proved wrong, which is why we're going to pass now over to Rasmus.
I mean, I have to agree with you on, you need to figure out what your story is overall. Why do you actually want to put yourself and or your work out into the social media sphere? Do you have an interesting story to tell, or are you just trying to push whatever it is you're selling? Either way, the more often you publish things, greater chance people will see it and notice it and remember it and then think of you when they want that kind of thing. And for that reason, kind of alone, it is worth it to publish things every single day, or at least on the regular. The algorithm changes all the time, so there's no reason for us to try to tell you what you should be doing right now. But a few basic rules apply. Like, yeah, consistency, good quality content. That not only the quality of the content, but also it is a consistent quality relatable to your brand and what you're doing. If, like Dan is saying, like normally everything you post is like of the really nice workbench corner showing off your product, but then you start talking and the background is your bedroom with underwear drying in the background, then there's a big tonal shift in what you're trying to sell or the story you're trying to tell.
Yeah, absolutely.
And at the same time, yeah, if you have nothing valuable to say, don't push it, don't stress it, because you could be at the risk of just spamming and repeating yourself so much that you actually lose interactions with people because you're flooding yourself out there.
So that's a very important word. And I think no matter which social media platform you're on, what they want you to do is generate interactions with people. And the more interactions you generate, whether they're positive or negative, it will be more likely to push you up whatever their current algorithm is for putting it forward. So on that note, it would be well worth, as a small sidebar, making yourself aware of some really basic targets to hit on whatever social media platform you choose. And what I mean by that is, there is potential on some of the platforms for you to earn revenue if your videos get enough views within a certain time period and everything else. So it's worth having a look at the different platforms that offer that and see what those are, not as a target, not as a primary focus. But the reason why I mention this is I've got a colleague who's started working with me in the day job recently, and we were talking about TikTok. I have to be careful and use its proper name. I always call it Tickety-Tock. Don't know why. Just what we say around. And we were talking about the company TikTok channel, which is relatively new, doesn't have necessarily that many followers. And then I'm in this situation that I find bizarre because I'm an old man, that I have no content whatsoever posted on the TikTok account that I have on there, which is not a Bevelwood account. So there's no point looking for it. And there's nothing there. But I have 56 people following me. I have made one comment on one video where I asked a very specific question of the person in that video, and he's responded. It was almost, if you like, a private conversation. No one else has commented on that. But 56 people have followed my profile just in case. All right. So as a platform, I thought, oh, that's quite odd. My colleague smiled. Now, she at one point in time was a Twitch streamer. So that's someone playing computer games on a streaming platform that people could watch live, right? And I said, go on then, how many people follow you on this particular social media platform? And she said, well, actually, none of them follow me because of my gaming past, but I have 27,500 people who follow me on TikTok. And I was like, okay, so what happened there? She said, well, I didn't realize, but a couple of videos I posted went viral. And the videos she posted that went viral were of her reading stories about how people on Reddit had written in stories of how their hamsters had died. Okay. At no point have I asked the question whether they were amusing or sad or how she read them or whatever. But for some strange reason, for a brief period of time, lots of people were watching and resharing and commenting on those particular videos. So she gained quite a large following. What she didn't realize was that, because she hadn't realized she'd gone viral, when she found out, and then she looked, then she thought a couple of days later, she was like, oh, I should probably try capitalizing on this. She had missed the window where she could have pressed the button where it would have activated her generating a revenue from any future content she made. Because it's such a small window for the volume of likes and views that you need to have on that particular platform. So it's just as a sidebar, worth knowing if I'm going on TikTok, YouTube, etc., you know, what are the requirements before you can monetize your content, which could potentially, as we were discussing last week, be another revenue stream from, you know, without you having to, I was going to say without you having to put too much effort in, but you know what I mean? It's a passive income, passive revenue stream. That's what I was going to say. Sorry. So now I've deviated from the overall topic, but coming back to it, one of the biggest things that any of the marketing experts that I've watched or I've interacted with who have spoken about social media have said to me is that if you are trying to sell a product and not just talk generically about your life, as with everything, is you need to establish trust and you need to establish a level of, get the word, but subject knowledge, that you know what you're talking about. Or if you don't know, that you're admitting up front, this is my level within the subject that I'm talking about, so that you know you've got that authenticity as well as generating trust in anything that you are posting, whether you are talking, whether you're just writing text under an image or whatever. And I think, Heidi, you mentioned in the pre-chat, I don't think it was necessarily in this context, there are some social media people who never show their face. And it might just be their hands and a workbench and then a voiceover of stuff on the workbench. And they can be sometimes really, really good, because if you're looking up the kind of video where you just want to know, how does this little widget work? And they'll show you how that little widget works. You don't necessarily care about who the person is who's telling you. You just want to physically see how it works and why. But if they are a person who is trying to sell you on the whole story of a specific product that they're making, that they're crafting from start to finish, it can be a little bit harder if it's harder to build up trust in that manner. Is that something that was kind of, you know, related to what you were saying pre-show, or am I trying to load a question there and it's going to be difficult for you to talk about?
No, I think the approach for some people is that they want to keep their anonymity. right? Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily want to be the face of their business. They want their product to be the face. That's why some people name their businesses not with their names. Some people are not the face of their business when it comes to, you know, advertising offline. And then there's like the makers that I've seen that do very similar thing where they're just working with their hands. That's their whole thing, is that they're showing you their process, and then they're telling they have a kit account, or they have an affiliate link to the tools that they're showing in their social media. So it's just what does that approach give them? In some, it's if I just show my products, then I'm only selling my product. In some cases, people are showing the process and their craftsmanship, and then ultimately selling their products plus the tools that they use. So they have two audiences. They have the consumer end that just wants the end product. And then they have the people that are passionate about the craft that are like, I like what you're making. I'm probably going to buy your product too, but I also want to set up my shop the way that you have yours. Mm. And then there's less pressure on what do I look like? Do I have my hair cut? Do I have makeup on? You know, like, am I overweight? Am I too thin? Am I athletic? Am I sexy? Am I old? Am I young? You know, like,
yeah.
All of those hangups that you can fall into with social media more so.
I think there's also, and this is a point that I know Red will be screaming at the
age
thing about. No, not age. Not age. But certainly, you know, the thing that he did and we know other makers have done as well is that if you were, for instance, just focusing on YouTube, if you don't talk or show your face, then there is no language barrier.
Hmm.
So if you were trying to reach a global audience, then removing those two elements out mean that if it is purely just visual content, then you're not ostracizing. The only people you're ostracizing basically are blind or don't have an internet connection. So those are definitely things to take into consideration when you're talking about, again, what is your intention? What is it you want to do? But yeah, definitely some really valuable points in there, Heidi. Thank you. I was going to move on to something slightly different. Rasmus, you don't look like you're itching to say something necessarily on this particular angle, but was there something you wanted to add?
Mm.
I'd say that's a no. Too long.
Okay, fine.
I was going to talk about the fact that obviously you've got to establish trust, but once you've established a trust, it's really important, I think, as well, to always tell the truth. Like, part of establishing trust is the fact that you tell the truth. And I'm not saying that, you know, be an open book and share deep and personal and meaningful things and whatever, unless that's the persona that you're willing to share. But I think it's very important to be honest right from the get-go and not try and create a false persona. Because if you are going to physically go to a market, and people follow you on social media and then go and meet you physically at a market, and when they meet you, you're not the same, that will have a negative impact. And it will be very difficult to keep, you know, it'll be very difficult to grow in all of the angles, whether it's sales or social media or whatever. If you have two different sort of characters, if you like, no matter how many times you tell people you've got an evil twin and they're very different from you, it's not going to work. So it's very relevant, I think, to make sure that you establish a truth and trust. And I wanted to lead this on with you, Raz, because this is one of the things I witnessed when we were in Norway, was the fact that if people asked you a question about, for instance, oh, can you, you know, if we buy this product off you and we sell X amount, can you then produce 10 times the amount next month?
Mm.
And you didn't say, well, you know, how many are you willing to buy on the first one and like try and get a big sale and then not be able to deliver in the future or work out or basically go, well, I'll figure that out when I get there. You were upfront and just said no. Like, you know, there was no over embellishment or kind of going, oh, well, maybe or whatever. It was just no.
Yeah. And granted, Norway has a way more direct way of communicating and a lot less pleasantries and politeness in our natural language than, for example, English does. So culturally speaking, we talk differently about things like this. But also, I am a bit more direct in Norway than most people. But it also goes to the thing of, I am the one making all of these products.
Mm-hmm.
I know the limit of my time. I know the, in theory, I know all the other commitments I have. So it's not the month by month I can scale this by 10x. It's maybe a year to year. Maybe I could. But that was not their question. The question was more like, oh, we might consider giving this a go, but then we would need to have it everywhere in the country. I was like, then I'm kind of not your guy, sadly.
So I think that's good is, you know, what's your intention and then knowing your limitations.
And also the story I'm telling is that this isn't mass produced.
Yeah.
So me trying to chase that would go against the story I'm trying to tell as a business.
Yes.
Which is basically means that no, I can't deliver 10x kind of no matter what, because there should be a certain amount of exclusivity to these items based on the fact that I am the one making every single one of them. This is the story I'm telling. This story might change down the line, but of course, here and now, that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you know, just looking at that with the virality that social media can go. So you're talking about an in-person interaction, but say social media globs onto your store and then you start getting a ridiculous number of orders that there's no way that you can fulfill it. I've known potters that have had to scale up tremendously in that way because their product was so in demand and some of them went for it. And they, you know, hired out a firm to help them figure out how to manufacture the pieces. And then they ended up just doing what, like, I guess the old masters would do, right? Where you would build a piece and then someone else would replicate and then it would be mass produced. So it's no longer got your fingerprints in it, so to speak, but it is from your ideation. So in that way, like understanding that those things do happen where things do go viral. Like there was a mug recently that had like just a little mushroom on the handle and it took off. It went crazy and the maker couldn't keep up with it. So she just basically said, you know, I'm going to do a tutorial of how to make it.
Okay.
And that's what she sold. So like having those contingency plans too, when someone comes to you and says like, I like what you're doing. I would like to make X number. And that's within your wheelhouse. And then some other, you know, millions of people see what you're doing. They fall in love with it. Like, what is your plan if or when your work might take off? What is your answer? Is it as clear as Rasmus? Like, no, that's not my brand story. I'm not willing to do that. Or is it actually, I am more interested in the story of the design versus the story of the end product. Like, those are all opportunities. It doesn't make you less of a maker. It doesn't make you having less ownership over your craft, maybe less ownership over the end product, but depending on what kind of contracts you put in place, what kind of materials you okay the companies to use, you can grow something to an exponential level if you have the right partnerships around you. So I think there's always an opportunity when people do come to you and say, like, I like what you're doing. I'd like to explode it. Don't be surprised that if you have one of those TikTok moments where you walk away from your computer and you come back and you've got 10,000 views and suddenly somebody wants your t-shirt. They want your t-shirt design and they only want your t-shirt design.
Yeah.
Like, you may only have a short window to be able to jump on that and boost your product. But those things do happen. And understanding what your network around you is really helpful.
Yeah.
Last year, I talked a little bit about that business series that I did with Pitt University. And one of the things that they do for makers is they help you build that network of support around you in case things like that happen. So say like, I need somebody to come in and help me finish 200 pieces because I ended up with a giant order and something happened in my process that required me to like throw a bunch, but I need someone else to come in and help me assemble it. They would help me find a resource to do that finishing work. So it may not be as like, oh, I need to sell 10,000 of these products now, or I need to fulfill 10,000. It may just be like that little bit, but there's a network around you when things do start to get exciting.
That's a really valuable point. And, you know, goes back to the whole thing we've said in last season about, you know, planning and where do you want it to go? And, you know, and almost to a certain extent, what would you do if X happened? And it's not about, oh, well, that's never going to happen, or saying that you should buy loads of extra machinery or space or packaging or whatever, just in case. It's about having a plan in place that you feel comfortable with, that in case, you know, you thought, oh, I'll sell 5 of these, and then you get 100 orders. That's enough of a bump without being it, you know, going viral, for you to suddenly go, oh, I only get 2 hours a week to make these, and I haven't got enough stock to make more than 20. So, you know, you've then got to manage expectations for people. And before we go on one, Raz, which I'm sure you've got a point on this, but I just wanted to highlight Seth Rogen. So, comedic actor, likes to throw pottery, has got his own brand where he has pottery products on it that he sells. Every single one of them clearly states in a description that is bigger than the actual description that none of them are handmade by him, and that they are made by a different, you know, an associated group. And it specifically says on there that his pottery kiln and his like setup and everything is hobbyish. It's not set up for mass production. And it would mean that, you know, he wouldn't be able to do all of the other things. So they've made it really, really clear. You are not making something made by him. You're making something designed by him, and that he has had a hand in making. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a really interesting thing of going back to what we're saying about establishing, you know, trust, truth, and integrity. That he's you know, he's advertising it. He's using the power of his kind of stardom to get these sales, but he's not claiming that he's then making every product. Sorry, Raz, go ahead.
If I remember what I was saying, because I was really surprised Seth Rogen is doing pottery. I didn't know that. But that's really cool. No, price thing. If your thing goes super viral and everybody's looking to buy it, then yes, you probably did either a really, really good marketing story or has a really, really good product. But if demand is so far outpacing your ability to supply, maybe you could actually turn up your prices to stem that flow of orders a bit. Granted, you need to be there in the moment to adjust for that. But that's a thought. Like, if you're consistently selling out everything you make of a certain thing, then arguably you're selling it too cheaply. I think the story goes that a hotel only wants to be like 90% sold out. Because that's kind of the threshold of saying that, yeah, our pricing is correct enough for this market, this season. We still have room for drop-ins that we can cater to them. But also, we are priced expensive enough so that we are making the money that is in the market for this. Which is like, yeah, maybe not something you want to do, like when it comes to just squeezing money out of the community at every option, every chance you get. But then again, if you are struggling with keep up with demand, and this is your passion, this is the thing you make a living off, dialing up the prices can help kind of mitigate that pressure, and you can focus on making higher quality but fewer of them instead of chasing the numbers or the quantity and maybe possibly losing sight of the quality that people liked in the beginning.
I think there are a lot of different things that you can do if you're ever fortunate enough to be in that situation. I know a maker who has a product, and she got a huge amount of orders over Christmas, and she didn't change the price. All she did was send a blanket email to everyone and say, thank you very much for all of your orders. They were ordered between Christmas and New Year, so they weren't for Christmas gifts, so she didn't have to worry about that. And she basically just said, I have enough stock to make this many. If you're fortunate enough to be in the first batch, this is when they'll be released. The rest of them I'm going to have to do in batches because she lives on a narrow boat on a canal. So she physically cannot hold more than a certain amount of materials to make product. Yeah. And so she just was straight up and just said, look, these are going to have to be done in batches. I can do X amount per batch. there are going to be 8 batches. The final one will be sent out in the beginning of March. If that is too, you know, if you can't wait that long or whatever, then let me know and I will refund you in full.
Mm.
And that's basically what she did. She had 2 people ask for a refund.
Nice.
So she, you know, she's managed expectations. She's still got her shop open. She's not working faster than she needs to. And she's able to kind of like, you know, she knows she's already put it into bite-sized portions. She's already split it down. So she's not going, I need to make 500 of these things. She's saying, right, I can make 50 in a batch or whatever it was. So I need to make 50 of these this week or, you know, and then I've run out of stock. It takes a week for stock to arrive back in. So she kind of gets like a breather in between. And that was really well done. But she didn't adjust the price because the price was the price. But that was more because her product, it's one of those ones where it just kind of like there is an upper limit where people will be prepared to pay. And it's unique, but not unique enough that there aren't alternatives around on the market.
And if she knows that, she knows her customers, she knows the market.
She's very good at that. Yeah, she worked for a major supermarket chain for about 15 years as one of their brand managers before leaving and going and running away. And rather than having a mortgage, just lives on a boat, which she has to move every 3 weeks. That's a shame, isn't it?
Yeah, that sounds terrible or something.
Yeah, her and her partner just sort of spend up to 3 weeks in one location and then have to move and that's it. So they have to travel up and down this canal, which makes for good social media content.
Yes.
Because she then gets to share about her local environment and why she enjoys her local environment and all of that kind of stuff. And yes, she does happen to have a cat who lives on the boat with her. So that will make an appearance in some of her social media, but not deliberately so. Those of you who have not tried herding animals to appear specifically in social media posts, don't do it. If it happens naturally and it works, that's great. Don't try and force it and go, I'll get more likes because there's a dog in my picture. It's not the way it works. Mm. Or at least not the way I found it works anyway. Okay, so the next point I've got on here is avoiding off-brand topics. So I don't mean to say that if something's happened in the world, you shouldn't talk about it. But unless your brand is specifically linked to, for instance, a religion or a political stance, and you've continued that throughout your posting, they tend to be quite polarizing subjects, generally speaking, much as they are at a meal table. My recommendation, and I state this is my recommendation, the others might disagree with me, but my recommendation that unless it is linked integrally to your brand and obviously so that you steer away from those kind of conversations or topics, because although any interaction will help, we do live in a world where you've only got to have one person make a claim that you're making a statement that you don't think you are, and it can rapidly shut you down and remove trust and remove all those things you've worked hard to build up. So they are subjects that I would take great care considering about. Basically, when you're posting anything, if you rewrite it or reshoot it more than twice and you're still not sure you've got the tone of the message across, it's probably worth just not doing that post unless you're really that passionately about the subject matter. I would just be very careful. That's a random thought from me, but do either of you two, you know, feel free if you disagree or you think there's a different angle I haven't mentioned on that subject.
I mean, speaking for me and how I portray myself is I'm first and foremost showing me and my personality, but that is very much tailored to be very blacksmith oriented. And a lot of the things that are associated with that is something that I more often than not will talk about. It doesn't need to be product specific, doesn't need to be technique specific. It might just be vaguely metal-based history, and I can show that off. But to the same extent, I haven't. But things I have considered posting about is steel mills, foundries shutting down, and how sad that is. And also, which is really contentious, coal power plants and how the fact that they are shutting down means that mines are shutting down, which means that a supply of good quality black spinning coal is getting really difficult to get a hold of. That could be interpreted as really political things. I don't care to take that political stance about them, but I can't talk about them privately. I can muse about them. I can have a discussion about that. But that doesn't feel like something that fits my brand, mostly probably because I don't want that political discussion around it myself. Well, not with strangers, as you say. I don't mind arguing and discussing with friends because I, generally speaking, know that they don't mean me harm. But every so often on the internet, you don't know that.
Yeah, very true. I mean, I think the only thing in that situation that I would consider is if, you know, there'd been a large amount of pre-orders made for a specific product and then you suddenly discover that steel wasn't available anymore. So there was going to be like a delay or it was going to change the look of the thing or whatever. And you were able to then just say, you know, hi, customers, due to the fact that this has happened, that's meant this place is closed down. That means the steel that I got that was really good for this isn't available anymore. So unfortunately, I'm going to have to change to this thing. So you're addressing the reasoning why something's happening without furthering down that rabbit hole. And I think, you know, that's different from, as you just said, you know, sitting down with the mug of tea on the anvil and kind of going, today we're going to talk about, you know, all of the reasons why my coal is different and I'm, you know, and it's not ideal and all that kind of stuff.
There's a lot of different ways of having that conversation. Yeah. And it's like hating on politicians for doing their job, I don't think it's the right way of doing it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But explaining and saying like cause and effect, this is where we're at. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. I've been lucky. I haven't been in that situation yet. I have changed steel types for things. I have done, and like I think I mentioned, did you mention a couple of times ago that my normal steel supplier was bought out of Norway?
Yes, you did. You did mention that, yeah.
Yeah. So I had just designed a product based upon a specific steel I knew they could deliver. And I have yet to find someone who can deliver that in Norway to replace them.
Yeah.
I can fulfill the current orders of this thing, but I don't know how expensive it will be to fulfill the next batch if I decide to do so, because maybe I need to just buy 5 sticks of steel out of Sweden and have that shipped to Norway, and that will be really expensive.
Yeah.
But there's ways of managing this, and I've talked to a couple of friends, and there's a collective of blacksmiths who will buy in bulk from abroad, whether that's hardening oil or coal or grinding belts.
The way my head went then was you said it's in Sweden, which is relatively close proximity across some water, and then you said there are ways of dealing with this. I have some friends. I have a collective of blacksmiths. And my brain just went straight to the long ships are coming out again. We're going across the water to the steel mill, you know, and I just thought, well, you know, if that's how you've got to get things done and your heritage, yeah, go for it.
I'm not saying that's happening, but I'm not saying it's not happening.
Well, I think that segues us in really nicely into another point about social media, is that because social media exists, you do get that collective of people that also do the thing that you do. So when those kind of economic changes happen, those manufacturing changes happen, you guys can kind of brainstorm together what can be done. Recently, in my network of ceramicists, there was a ceramics artist who was used to using a certain glaze that they bought commercially, and they wanted to be able to create it with a generic recipe. And there were a lot of different people that were saying like, oh, well, I do this, or here's my recipe, or, you know, you should be on the lookout for this because this material isn't available anymore. You know, those kind of opportunities that come up because you are making yourself available on social media and you are sharing your process allow other people to, not always in a positive way, but like 9 times out of 10, what I'm seeing, and it's probably different in the wood turning community, Dan, I have experienced some of those opinionated folks giving me opinions about how I should be throwing. It's very interesting. but in some maker communities, when you start building that rapport and sharing what you're doing, whether it's Instagram, YouTube, wherever, you do build that network of support that I was kind of referring to earlier too. And I think for you, Rasmus, this situation, had social media not been there, you may not have even realized that there were other blacksmiths in Norway, right?
Plus minus the fact that I went to blacksmithing school and studied. The vast majority of blacksmiths in Norway are not on social media.
Mm.
Not because they're old, but because they're
very introverted. Well, my point just went to shit.
No, it's still valid because there are, I mean, there's a very different types of people who are mostly on social media and who is mostly doing the craft. Like, we don't have a whole lot of blacksmiths in Norway. I think we are 25 full-time blacksmiths as their sole main income is swinging a hammer and doing metal shaping. 25 in the whole country.
It's nearly two-thirds of the population.
Shut up. Most of those are not on Instagram or social media.
Yeah.
Because they're busy out there doing the craft. They are inside of the old system before internet and social media was a big thing.
Yeah.
And they might be my age or younger, but they, quote unquote, inherited a business. They didn't need to go on social media. And then you have a whole other generation, basically, of blacksmiths who got into it outside of the old cultural heritage systems. And they are a lot more on social media. There's overlap. I am one of those. My old teacher is one of them. And there's a handful of others. But most people are like, social media is a necessary evil I have to deal with because it's mandated by my position that I need to publish and document what I'm doing. And then there's people who are like, I'm really excited about this glowing stick. So, and social media bridges that gap. There's a lot of people who are only consuming and not producing content. We kind of need to remember that as quote unquote content creators, because we, at least I tend to forget that most people have some hang up about my thing isn't good enough. I'm not putting it out there. But you putting it out there means that they have someone to look to. And then when you need help, they could actually come out and say like, hey, I got a thing for that.
Speaking about having a thing for that, I think we're missing the very, very obvious here, which is that I would have never have met either of you if it wasn't for social media. We wouldn't be creating this content at all if it wasn't for social media. We might individually be making things at home. And, you know, if the internet didn't exist, we would quite probably all be creating something, following some creative passion. But sort of going back to what you mentioned earlier, Heidi, so your social media can do two things. So what is your intention? Well, your intention would be that you're trying to establish a customer base. You're trying to establish a group of people who will purchase product from you. Great. Or are you trying to establish a network of people who will cheerlead, who will support, who can be there when you're not sure if what you've made is a good thing or not, and will be politely critical, you know, so they won't just say, oh, that's amazing, it's great. As we've mentioned in the past, you know, don't ask direct family members unless they're like that, what they think of the product you've made. Don't even ask like immediate friends what they think of the product you've made. Ask the ones who will look at it and go, well, that's a bit, you know, it's a bit lopsided here, isn't it? Like, did you mean to do this? Like, is this bit of whatever over here, was that intentional and all of that kind of stuff? So if your intention for your social media is to be your kind of safe space with a group of people who you know are going to champion you, then that's a very different usage of social media, but just as valid and just as important, particularly as most of us are working on our own, in our own little headspace, in our own little workshop. And if you're also single as well, it can be quite difficult at times for a wide variety of reasons. So I think it's important that although, and I'm worse for this one, that we talk an awful lot about product and sales and generating revenue and whatever else, because we're talking about business, there's nothing wrong with having split channels or split levels of social media. So for instance, you know, you can talk about whether or not people like short form and long form and all of that kind of stuff, but there's no reason why I can't have Bevelwood UK, which is my my account for everything facing my customers. But if I've got a separate account where my friends can get hold of me, and I know that the only people contacting me on that are my friends, so if I see a message pop up there, I'm more likely to give it time. That's just as valuable, you know, because otherwise, if I was restricted to people locally to me who are interested in craft and having to interact with them, and not a problem with it at all, but most of them are retired because they're taking it up as a hobby after they've done the day job. But that then means that I've got to finish my day job, find some time when we can both socially interact, which can prove difficult when, you know, they've got different priorities to you. Whereas social media allows you to have that kind of micro conversations throughout the day, or share some things of the same interest. Or if you've posed a problem to a group and say, hey, look, I know I want to get from here to there, but I don't know what this bit in the middle looks like. Can people give me options and suggestions? You can write that in like a WhatsApp group or in a social media message to a bunch of people, and then come back to it in your lunch break and probably find like one or 20 different variety of options and different thought processes, because creative people like to problem solve. And so that can be absolutely invaluable in creating that kind of that support network and that community for yourself, but also allowing you to then share and give back to that group. You know, it can be a very reciprocal kind of thing that will help you through quite a lot of different things, and can lead to, you know, physical meetups at events and whatever, and challenges which work really nicely. You know, why did you make that thing like that? You know, Heidi and I talk occasionally about, you know, pottery versus wood turning. You, both of them, you're spinning something and making it round. Okay, but why is that fixed like that? And how would you put pressure here to make this shape? And, you know, you get very technical about it, but it's quite interesting to see how forms are made in different ways, and the way they're held onto things if you're going to get really technical into it. Blacksmiths, again, I'm jealous of you all. You get to have your hammer ins. You get to all just rock up and smash pieces of steel with hammers and all of that kind of stuff. There isn't really an equivalent of that for, certainly not for blacksmiths, and probably not so much for potters, because it, you know, you can't group an item. You know, you need, everyone would need their own lathe, and then you're facing in one direction. You're not kind of, it's not a shared experience.
Mm.
So it can be quite tricky. I'm just going to go quiet there a moment and let that set and rest in. Raz, you wanted to talk about AI to do with this. So why don't you introduce that part of the subject?
Wanted to is a strong word. But yes, AI is also something I guess you can't really gloss over nowadays. And there's a lot of different ways of using it. But I think like the basic version, I think the one thing that I think it's really good at the moment is like proofreading things for you, checking for tone, also comparing things to see if your message gets across correctly and things like that. Maybe, I don't know what you guys think about this and how you've been using it. To me, it feels overkill to use AI for the everyday Instagram post, because that feels like a hang up in the process of getting things out there for me more than it feels like it's going to benefit me. But I have been using it a fair bit when it comes to writing newsletters, just to check, is my tone correctly? Is my language correct? Because English is not my second language. Yes, it's a huge shocker for everyone listening. And sort of also to figure out what can be improved upon. And granted, AI is very much valuable, but it can give you a second perspective. It can point out things to you to help you improve and make you more aware of things that might need a second look. Maybe it doesn't actually give you a good suggestion for how to fix it, but it might point out and say like, hey, this formulation thing doesn't really work the way I think you want it to work. And the suggestions might be shit, but it might tell you that, oh, okay, that proves that if there's a spelling mistake that makes the AI go wonky. I mean, if I do that correctly, now it is good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're not going to be able to get away from AI. And the important thing to realize is that it's a tool. And the same with any tool, whether it's physical or digital, if you don't learn how to use it properly, you're always going to be a little bit wary of it or just never understand how useful it can be. I'm not on the fence about it. I will use ChatGPT, for instance, I used it on Saturday, and I used it to write a risk assessment for my workshop. Okay, so very boring piece of health and safety sort of, you know, document, but it needs to be done for something that's happening with my workshop. And if I want to have students in there, it needs to be done. And I was very, very specific with it. I said what type of workshop I want. You know, the prompt that I wrote was about 6 lines long. But hit enter, and I had to edit 2 words and add 2 more lines to it, and then it was done. Whereas if I'd sat there, I would have wasted half an hour working out what thickness of dark line to surround my Excel columns with, and my titles, and what font to use, all in procrastination away from not bothering to start the actual task at hand, because I didn't want to do it. So for things like that, it's very useful, and you can tell it, you know, make this compliant with current UK health and safety law and all that kind of stuff. And so it can be very useful. But always, as you said, Rasmus, if you're using it one way or the other, you should always proofread. Particularly if this is something that you're putting into a public space, always proofread it and then get someone else to second proofread it if that's available to you. But I'm quite interested and I'm quite excited because ChatGPT, so you can write a text prompt and it will generate a text for you. And they've got associated other software. So they've got Midjourney, so you can write a text prompt and it will generate images for you. They are releasing within the next 12 months a text prompt to video package. And looking at the trial videos that they've released where they've showed you what the text prompt was and then they've showed you the end result of the video, it's still clearly computer generated. But there's one on there that I particularly like, which is 2 photorealistic pirate ships having a battle in the top of a coffee cup.
Yeah.
And they're sailing in a circle, shooting at each other on the top of a coffee cup. Now, as soon as I saw that, my brain was going, okay, Skull and Spade 13 needs to make a coffee, and this needs to be the sort of thing used in his advert for his coffee, that he doesn't need to pay a digital imaging company thousands of dollars to generate this. He could, you know, get this created on his own. And bear in mind that none of these videos come with audio. So you're going to have to generate the audio yourself. So there's still a lot of work to be done. This isn't like, oh yeah, one and done and off I go. But if you wanted to use it for adding an animated element or adding a movement element into some form of advertising you're doing or whatever, I think that's potentially quite an exciting piece of software that I'm quite looking forward to playing with. I have no idea what the rendering time on things will be or how much it's going to cost. But I think that's certainly quite exciting. Easy to fall down the rabbit hole with and easy to get caught up in debates on it. But again, I think if you go back to your sort of the integrity and the truth and you talk about, you know, you don't hide behind things and claim that you've paid some company vast amounts of money to create something, then you've done it in a software company like that. I don't see it as being an issue personally. The other side of it is, where have they scraped the original source data from?
Which is a whole
conversation. Is a very, very different conversation. And as craftspeople and artists and people who make things, I would suggest that if you aren't aware of that conversation, it would be worth looking into it and trying to find some impartial people who have done the research, or finding where you can research for yourself. Make your own decision as to whether or not you want to support various companies and what their AI software is doing. Does that sound fair, Heidi?
I'm of the camp that it's eliminating jobs in my market. So it's a very scary thing
for
that are in marketing.
Yeah, no, I absolutely can understand that 100%.
Now, I did build a business plan, so, you know, it did help.
But sort of on the whole AI thing, have either of you actually been using ChatGPT or similar tools actively? Like Dan, you mentioned,
Google version.
Yeah, I mean, large language models, whatever you name it.
I used it to, not to write social media, I have used it to write some descriptions for my website. So what I have tend to find is that my brain works faster than I can type. And so I get bored.
Yeah.
So even though I am writing about something I am passionate about, I have thought about that product for so long that when it comes to writing a description that is going to try and encourage people to buy it, I know what I want it to say, but I can't be bothered to start because I know that by the time I've got to the second line, I'm not interested and, you know, my brain's run off somewhere else. So I have been able to kind of throw those bullet points of vaguely what I want to say and tell software to write it in such a way and all of this kind of stuff. But that being said, I know I need to go back and redo some of those because when I first did that, I didn't know how to properly write a prompt.
Yeah.
And I'm still learning how to do that. But, you know, that's something that will change over time. Because, and this is something you might appreciate more as well, ideas like copywriting is you never realize how difficult a skill it is until you try and do it. Like, if I was to dictate a paragraph to someone, that would be fine. I had no problem at all. And I can look over the shoulder and I can know, right, edit that bit, change that bit. No, I don't like that. Do this, whatever. So I kind of use ChatGPT almost as like my typist.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like throwing the ideas at them and going, and then, you know, giving them a clip around the ear and say, that's not what I meant at all. And, you know, and changing it and doing it that way rather than, you know, I'm well aware that I don't have enough time. I'm not willing to make enough time, I should say, to learn how to copyright properly in order to write descriptions and things like that. Social media posts, on the other hand, I feel are a lot more in the moment, a lot more from the heart. So I steer away from using it for social media posts.
Hmm.
And on that bombshell.
Heidi, do you use ChatGPT? Or what's the task you've used it for? I guess it's the better question.
Usually to narrow down subject matter, like just to get better ideas of how to present something. It used to be called Bard. I don't know what Google has changed it to. Like
Gemini, I think.
Gemini?
Yeah.
Okay. So when it was Bard, I used it, like I said, to build my business plan to help me consolidate my thoughts. And it really, because I gave it a lot, it gave me a consolidated, better way of saying it, which for me was super helpful because I'm not a lawyer and I didn't want to pay someone to like build a business plan for me. I didn't want to go through that process when developing my LLC. But then we've also experimented with it a little bit when it comes to taking brand information and consolidating it into a concise bullet pointed sign. So when you're talking about like, oh, well, there's this backpack and it does all of these 15 things and it has all of these compartments and here's the leader size and say, I just wanted a super simple sign that gives the highlighted bullet points of what that pack does, not like a 2-page dissertation on that pack. Because we don't have an assigned copywriter, it is helpful to be able to kind of put it through an engine, walk away and come back and have like, we think that we understand that you wanted this, and here are 4 options that you can use, and you can use bits and pieces of those different options to, you know, to create what your end result is. I like that with Google, it is doing that where it's giving you multitudes of options where you can go, oh, I didn't even think about approaching it that way. It's almost like having an extra person in the room. I mean, it is. Mm. AI, right? Like that's the whole definition of AI is that it is like a person in the room. There is some like weirdness to it, like of the whole politicizing it. And does it result in less jobs in the marketplace? Does it end up being that things are more concise and, you know, predictable because it is written by a computer? I time will only tell, but for me, when it comes to social media, I have used it to like give me prompts. Like if I'm running dry on things I can talk about, or I've already studied this one way, and here's what other approaches can I use? There are tools that you can organize, say like an entire month's worth of social media posts. Like Danny, we're talking about, like, you don't want to post just to post.
Yeah.
Like if you're having a really good inspirational day, you can plan out posts for those days that you're not really feeling
absolutely.
And then if you integrate the social media and the AI portion, there are companies now, like when I went to go update my website, for instance, they added on a tool that you can pay for you to put all of your language through AI, and it will create your website in multiple different languages that basically say the same thing. If you wanted to narrow down like the different information. So if you are trying to do like an international situation, you can be a little bit more, I don't know. You don't have to pay somebody to translate for you.
There's definitely a widening toolkit of different elements that can help you against things. And that is something, one of the things you mentioned there, Heidi, that we should have mentioned earlier was the fact of, don't forget that you can schedule. It's like if you're having a really productive day and actually go, oh, that'd be cool for this and that'd be cool for that. It's like, just take the photos, film the footage or whatever, maybe spend that couple of hours and just create all that content and just schedule it out. Just put it all in there.
Right.
Like the,
especially if you go to the effort of having your products photoed by a professional.
Absolutely.
Like, don't be afraid to utilize those photos in multiple different places, but also like you can put filters and things over top of them that give movements. You can put sound.
Zoom in and out.
You can zoom in and out. You can add text over top. There are ways of using those stagnant images that you created of your workshop time or of your product that can inspire a prompt for yourself. Yeah. And then there's Made for Makers coming up too, that they give you 30 days of.
Yeah. I always forget about that until people start posting and then I don't see it for like a couple of days. And then I'm like, oh yeah, it's Made for Makers. And it's like the third. Yeah. I did it the first year and it was really helpful, but there are definitely things that can help and like scheduling ahead and all of that kind of stuff. So just to start wrapping this up, just to sort of summarize, really, your intention is really important. Whichever platform you're using, what are you intending to use it for? Be aware of that before you kind of create this new account and you label it or whatever. But equally, as Heidi mentioned, you can change your pictures, you can change your logo, you can even change the name of your account. You know, these are all things that are available to you. This is not like engraved in stone and then going to be found 40 years later or something if you're running for a governor. Like, don't worry about it. It's all of it is changeable and removable and all of that kind of stuff. So what is your intention? Establish trust, like tell the truth, you know, depending on what it is you're wanting to use the thing for, whether it's for selling or for establishing a wider group of a network of, you know, like-minded individuals, just be honest and all of that kind of good stuff. And you'll find that it will naturally kind of all come back to you again. Try to avoid off-brand topics or sort of elements of politics or religion or anything else that's quite sort of inflammatory, unless it happens to be part of your brand. Some people will deliberately be a bit, as Heidi said in the pre-show, a bit like a shock jock. They will deliberately kind of, you know, and if this is what you're going to do, like you've got to be prepared to really lean into it and take what's fired at you and be very, very thick-skinned. And if you think you're thick-skinned, we would recommend that you go and have a look at Guys in Every Film Customs and see the kind of content he posts, the comments that he gets underneath them on any of his social media and the way he reacts to them. If you're not prepared for that level, then maybe you're not as thick-skinned as you thought you were. But equally as well, you want to be able to be relatable to the audience that you're speaking to. I know all of this sounds generic and vague, but hopefully the conversation we've had today and some of the thoughts will make you understand a little bit more about some of the ways you can use social media and maybe some of the ways that it might not be a good idea to use social media if you're trying to present yourself forward as a professional in the business there. So thanks everyone for listening in to us today. And I'm going to end on asking the usual question of my co-hosts, which is, what is the one thing that you have done recently to push your business forwards to get to, you know, that next goal or that next target that you have? And we'll start with Rasmus today.
I have bought new tools to set things on fire. I have invested in an oxyacetylene torch because I have a job requiring me setting a lot of rivets. So now I have more flammable things in the forge than ever before, including acetylene and oxygen gas tanks, which is interesting.
I think we'll say well done and move straight on past that. That's a whole other episode there. Heidi?
Well, it's kind of boring. I had put off ordering clay and materials until the studio was ready. And so I ended up running out of clay this weekend with a big order and had to order clay. And Ben just went and picked up the 1,000 pounds of clay. They come in boxes of 50 pounds. So he, instead of having to carry them up to my second floor studio, which is basically three flights of stairs because the driveway is down below us, he only had to bring it up from the driveway to my studio now. And one flight of stairs.
So he's quite disappointed.
He likes to pick things up and put them down. So I think it's right in his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I asked him if he was going to go to the gym afterwards, and he politely declined.
Well, I think mine is slightly more boring than that, actually. And that is just, I got some admin work done. I got the risk assessment done for my workshop and wrote some official lesson plans for part of my upcoming assessment to prove that I am a suitable level for being a tutor. They want to actually see that I've thought about what I'm going to teach rather than just rocking up and going, right, let's put some sharp tools into some wood and all of that kind of good stuff. So, but it was an admin task that needed to be done. So that's out of the way now. Excellent. And on that fascinating note there, thank you very much, guys, as always, for being here. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We hope you'll listen again next time. And we've still got 2 to 3, we're not sure how many episodes left of this season. But I would remind people, as I should really remind every episode, that if you feel willing to give back and you feel that our content is worth it, we do have a Patreon account. And so any tips in there would be useful. We are intending to expand the amount of options in there. We have discussed that at the beginning of this season. I just haven't scheduled the time in for us to move that forward yet. So that's my fault, full responsibility. However, if you don't feel, as many can't in this time, that they can't offer financially, then follow, like, subscribe, etc. on the Setting Up Shop pages would be great. And equally would be lovely on our individual pages as well. So mine is at Bevelwood UK is my Instagram. Heidi is Whitehall Pottery. And Rasmus is Rasmus Lowen. So RASMUSLOEN. And I think really that's everything from us for today. So bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.